Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Welcome back to the program. Chad is out for the day. I'm Dave Schrader sitting in. You can normally find me Sunday nights right here from 7 to 9 p.m. on the Paranormal 360 program. I hope that you'll check that out. If you've missed any of those and would like to catch up, you can always find Paranormal 360 on the Odyssey app or right on the WCCO website. I want to, before I launch into our next discussion of drones, this is kind of eating me up. I brought a guest on wanting some insight as to why people would be drawn to murderers. And one comment really kind of, I don't know, I'm taking an exception with. And tell me if I'm wrong. Hit me up on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line, 651-461-9226. As we're talking about people like Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, Ted Bundy, Charles Manson, Richard Speck, many different killers that have received a lot of high-profile attention and then adoration from a certain element looking to connect with them, wanting love with them, wanting to be that person, that special person in their life, which is hard enough to conceive. What really just bothered me as we were talking to our guest, Dr. Carol Lieberman, and I don't know, Josh, if you heard this. She brought up Luigi Mangione. Yep. And that he murdered Brian Thompson. And she said, oh, and he's going to get so much attention because of what he did and what a cutie he is. Or how adorable he is.
Yeah.
And it was like this giddiness in her voice. As a forensic psychologist, I think maybe you'd want to distance yourself from that. Listen, Whether you believe that what he did is right or not, first of all, murdering anyone is not right. It's not the way to handle a situation. Right? There are other ways and other avenues to get your dissatisfaction out there. And I understand that there is a wide variety of people, and including myself, people that have feel burned out by our healthcare system, that have felt betrayed by our healthcare system. I understand that, but that does not allow you to go out and murder someone. And the glee in her voice, and maybe I misheard it, but the glee of, oh, and he's so adorable. Ick. So what? I don't care how beautiful you are, how magnificent looking you are. You're a murderer. Cold-blooded murderer. And people are lining up to love you. That's weird to me, man. That is so weird. But I guess, in a way, it's kind of a precedent we've set for ourselves, right? Robin Hood. He stole from the rich and gave to the poor, so that there's this romanticized version of criminality that we can accept because they're doing it for a purpose. And it's okay that we're doing this because of that. And we murder this man because we feel that healthcare has failed us. Yeah, and there are people pumping their fists and making comments online how they would have done that as well. I understand why they're going after him now for terrorists, because it seems to incense people to the fact that, yeah, we should step up. And if we're bothered by something and we feel that we can't take care of it and we're not being heard, there's another way. And that is improper information. That should not be it. You know what's disheartening to me is I typed in Luigi. I couldn't remember how to say Mangione. So yeah. I type it in. I've noticed that most of the headlines refer to Luigi Mangione murders. What was the way the headline was written here? I want to catch it. Gosh, no, of course it's not there. Most of the headlines are like Luigi Mangione charged with murder in United Healthcare CEO killing. There's continual mention in almost every one of these headlines of Luigi Mangione, but the victim is just kind of pushed aside.
Yeah.
And then we wonder why there's a certain celebrity that's associated to these killers. It's disgusting. One of the listeners hits me up on the talk and text line here. You did not mishear anything, Dave. It was disgusting how she said it. And then somebody else saying alleged. Right. Allegedly, he shot the man and killed him. But again, he's not just the man. He was somebody. He was Brian Thompson. And again, agree, disagree with the politics or the work ethic of a person, murder is never acceptable. That is not the way to handle these kind of situations. So I would like to apologize for bringing that guest on. And I would think that somebody that's vetting this as a forensic psychologist might have been a little bit more journalistic, have some kind of integrity. But I guess that's the problem we're seeing about a lot of the stories that are sent out there, is we are getting some very uncouth ways of handling it, and people are accepting of it now. So we just roll with it. We're going to take a break. When we come back, everybody's heard about the drones that are being sighted over places like New York and Philadelphia, New Jersey, now appearing in Texas and on the West Coast. Have you heard about these mysterious orb lights that are being seen right here in Minnesota? We'll discuss that next, right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back. In for Chad. I'm Dave Schrader. All right, let's go on about this. Have you heard about these drone sightings, right? They're happening all around the United States now, and it seems like the Twin Cities has also had its fair share of strange sightings. Everybody's got a story lately. As a matter of fact, just the other day, it was December 11th, there's a woman right here in Roseville, Chelsea Jolly. She spotted this bright orb in the sky and thought they might be drones. She even got it on video. And then a couple days later, Mika Zawatowski from Blaine had a very weird, wild experience during rush hour on the Lafayette Bridge in St. Paul. He said a craft was hovering so close, it felt like it was watching him. So what do you think is going on with these sightings? You can connect with me on the Stiles Financial talk and text line, 651-461-9226, 651-461-9226. Have you seen them? If you have, talk me through what the experience is, because right now, intelligence officials, according to the new articles, have claimed that they are revealing the source of these drones, especially the ones swarming New Jersey residents. So this isn't relatively new. This hasn't just been in the last week or two. It's been since mid-November now that these reports have emerged of these unidentified flying craft being seen over New Jersey, New York, and other East Coast states, causing public concern, of course, and some well-founded speculation. I mean, federal investigators are saying that many of these sightings are misidentified. They're just regular manned aircraft, lawful commercial drones, hobbyist devices, or even celestial objects, meaning just the stars in the sky that are being misidentified. However, let me point this out, that in a scene, I mean, this is reminiscent of any kind of high-stakes spy thriller, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio recently found itself under an aerial siege, not by enemy aircraft, but unidentified drones. On the night of December 13th, The base's airspace was locked down for 4 hours as these mysterious flying objects buzzed overhead, causing quite the stir among the military personnel. Oh, but don't worry, they're just commercial airlines or hobbyists flying their drones over restricted airspace. What? How is this possible that they think this blanket statement is going to put this away? They have not only closed down Wright-Patterson Air Force Base for a total of 4 hours, but they have closed down in New York, New Jersey, and a few other states, airports, because of these craft that are being seen. And it isn't one or two like a hobbyist would be, and it's not hundreds like you would see in a drone presentation. And if you haven't seen them, Disney does some amazing work. Go look up drone presentations, Disney. You'll see it's amazing. A lot of the different states are doing them as well for 4th of July. They're really beautiful. But these craft are more in the neighborhood of 4 to 20 in any given area, most of them being sighted near or around military bases and nuclear facilities. So if you know the answer, give me a call. Let me know. 651-461-9226. Is that acceptable? There's restricted airspace. There are so many rules and regulations to being a hobbyist or even a professional drone flyer to say that these are just regular drones, nothing to worry about, nothing to be concerned about here, folks. But yet we're shutting down airports. We're shutting down Air Force bases. It seems to fly in the face of what one hand is telling us from what the other hand is revealing about itself. I don't know. Have you seen it? I'd love to know. Right here on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Again, that's 651-461-9226. One said, hi, I saw a drone by Northtown and the guys controlling them were in the parking lot sitting in their car. The back seat was in Blaine. When we came by, they quickly ducked back in their car trying to hide. I believe these. Okay, so that's from one person. That's something different. That's one little drone that you can see, right? We're talking about people that are seeing and sighting multiple drones, some that they are saying are the size of aircraft. And we have another listener who says, I believe these huge drones should be banned. You know, President-elect Donald Trump is saying we should shoot them down. The problem that comes in with this, and I know a lot of people are saying, right, why aren't we shooting them down? There's things, first of all, you have to take into effect. First of all, they are being sighted over many of our military installations. They're being sighted over many of our major metropolitan cities. You shoot something down, it has to come down. That means it's going to crash potentially in a very populated area or in an area designated that we don't want craft crashing into, like a nuclear facility or our military installations. So we have to be careful with that. By inciting people to take a shot, which I hope people are not making that stupid mistake. First of all, if these are regular just drones and you're shooting them down and they're filled with lithium batteries, you can explode that, which can cause it to crash and can cause an instant fire that will be extremely hard to contain. That's according to some of the different reports from CNN and experts that have been discussing why we don't shoot this down. You as an individual might feel you have the right to bear arms and you want to protect yourself. There's a federal law. Be aware of that. It is federally against the law to shoot at drones. So do not do it because you'll end up in jail. More importantly, you probably don't have dead-eye aim, right? And if these things can move at blistering speeds where you think you may be shooting, may not hit this. And where a bullet goes up, it has to come down. And sadly, I was at in Roselle, Illinois, gosh, when I was about 11, 12 years old, for the 4th of July. And somebody was shooting guns off in the air about a half mile away. And one of the people that was sitting relatively near to me, I didn't know them, they were hit with the bullet. And luckily enough, one of the people that was right there, a former military veteran, recognized the sound of the bullet hitting, recognized what had happened, and they were able to get first aid for this person immediately. But you shoot, and you're shooting up at this, you got to be very careful. You know, again, something else to consider if we want to go on the darker end and spectrum of this. If these are craft that are being sent over by foreign groups, either China, Russia, Korea, one of the people that we may have some fear about, it could be considered an act of war by shooting one down. More importantly, are they carrying a dirty weapon or bomb on them that if we shoot it down, we'll then release something that can do devastation to a much larger part of the population over where it was shot? There's so much that needs to go into this. I'm not pleased with the way the government is handling this with any of this information because they're just not being forthcoming. And I understand there's an element of maybe they don't know what to say because they don't know what these things are. But certainly they should be pounding very heavily on the news. Do not take this into your own hands. Do not shoot at these things and explaining why, what the dangers are behind them. It can crash into a populated area. If it does have a dirty bomb attached to it, that is something to be concerned about. It could be considered an act of war. We have to be very careful with what we do as private citizens, plus be aware that it is a federal offense. Now, the Pentagon, according to New York Magazine, the Pentagon and FBI have been working overtime to unravel this airborne mystery. While some officials suggest these drones could be sophisticated surveillance tools from foreign adversaries like China, others believe they're simply misidentified commercial or hobbyist drones. The lack of concrete answers has left the public in suspense. And listen, if we didn't have potentiality to war on many sides of us right now, you've got Putin out there, you know, it seems in the news every week we're hearing a possible threat of nuclear retaliation or nuclear bombing. China is and has been testing supersonic weaponry. There's a good reason for us to be nervous about what's going on. So let's just be straight with the American public so that people don't fear and start doing dumb things in fear. Warn them and make them aware of the possibilities of what this could happen. Let's see. The New York Post says the incident is part of a larger pattern of drone sightings that have been causing headaches across the United States. From the bustling streets of New York to the quiet suburbs of New Jersey, enigmatic drones have been spotted near sensitive locations, including military installations and even former President Trump's Bedminster golf course. So, again, a lot of these areas are in restricted airspace. We've got to be extremely cautious and careful with what we're dealing with. Now, I don't want people jumping to conclusions as well, but I hope that the government, and I do think we need to force a hand on this. I did put out a request to have Senator Klobuchar join us because she recently went out and spoke about the drone situation on I believe it was CNN and to some of the local Fox News affiliate and such. We were unable to get her on the show, and I'm hoping to maybe have a talk with her in the next few days. But I'm fascinated by what's going on. Let's see. I've got a couple other messages in here if they're in sense. Oh, boy, that guy who honked at me because I forgot to signal 6 years ago. That's a different conversation overall. Anyway, so what are your thoughts? Feel free to hit me up on the stylesfinancial.com talk and text line. Maybe we'll touch on this again a little bit later. When we come back, Senator Karen Kaiser will be joining me. Now that the November elections are in our rearview mirror, and across the country, a wave of newly elected lawmakers are gearing up to take office. Many of these people are starting, you know, in stepping into uncharted territory and have made a lot of promises. What does this mean? How can they fulfill these promises? We're going to talk with Senator Kaiser from Washington State when we return. I'm Dave Schrader. This is News Talk 830 WCCO. Chad Hartman is off. I'm Dave Schrader. I am in with you this afternoon. And joining me today is Senator Karen Kaiser, who's here to share some invaluable insights from her new book, Getting Elected is the Easy Part, Working and Winning in the State Legislature. It's a one-of-a-kind resource for newly elected officials, advocates, and students of government. Karen Kaiser is an American journalist and politician of the Democratic Party. She represented the 33rd Legislative District in Washington State Senate and served in the Washington State Senate from 2001 up until December 10th of 2024. We're lucky enough to have her join us now. Thank you so much for joining us, Senator.
Thank you, Dave, for inviting me.
I'm very curious. You know, we watch these elections roll out. We listen to our politicians come forward, promising us change, promising us grandeur, the new America, the way we're going to take things back or the way we're going to break the old habits and come up with something new. And it seems that as soon as they gain access to the position in which they were elected, very little is done for the promises that were made. How disheartening is it to get into politics, to come in bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and wanting to make a difference, only to find that politics is not that cut and dry, and that your desire and hope of wanting to make changes don't always come to fruition?
Exactly. That's why I wrote the book, as a kind of guidebook, if you would, on how to get things done and make real change. Because a lot of people come in, as you say, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, ready to change the world, and they run right up against a marble hall and hit their head in that marble, and they can't seem to figure out how to get through the doors. There are a lot of hidden secrets and doors in every institution, and legislative institutions are very traditional, often very slow, and you need to figure out how to make them work. It takes time, and it takes a little bit of guidance.
Right, and I'm glad that you've got a book out there that maybe will give some good insight so that people can learn from the mistakes of the past and start to make some real changes. But when it comes to the concept of making these promises to begin with, how do we start to tamp that down and give us more realistic expectations when it seems like the laws are written in a way that politicians can say whatever they want to say without any recourse, without any kind of accountability held towards them if they fail in the things that they said that they were going to do?
Well, there is recourse because there's always another election. So if voters decide that they're promises were broken or not fulfilled well enough, voters can turn them out of office, and there's always that recourse. But the fact is, changing laws takes time and is difficult. It is a precision of legislative work that most candidates don't understand, unless they've been in some other governance situation with maybe a city council or something. At any rate, it's very wonky, and people get very frustrated with it, regular people as well as legislators. But I will say this, Dave, your state legislatures get a hell of a lot more done than we see from Congress in the federal government. I think in our state legislatures, where we work on issues like education and environment and health care and transportation, all the nuts and bolts kinds of things that make everyday life work for all of our working families, I think you see a lot more actual legislating get through the whole process than you do, sadly, at the federal level.
Right, but that's... right. That's mommy and daddy at the federal level. They're the ones that are supposed to be making sure that things go right so that we can feel safe. We can feel like our futures are open to us. But it doesn't play out that way. And I think that's why so many people are looking to break the political structure, why they're willing to vote for Donald Trump or willing to vote for a Jesse Ventura to kind of break the status quo so that we can start from a new ground zero.
I would say the status quo is already broken at the federal level. Congress can hardly get anything done except a budget, and that's usually a continuing resolution approach. Our state legislatures, however, can grow up and be very, very mature at getting stuff done. And I argue that we can get it done before the feds, whether it's increasing the minimum wage, providing paid family and medical leave, increasing unemployment benefits, helping everyday working people do better. And we can do that with our education, with our environment, and with our voting rights, with our labor rights. All of those issues can be addressed at the state legislative level and will be in states that have the members interested in those issues.
How do we go about getting our members interested in those issues instead of just the big political spectrum of, you know, taxes and abortion rights, which it seems to be at the forefront of every election series. How do we start getting them to look more into these things? And I know voting them in is one thing, but a lot of them say that that's what their goal is and then don't necessarily have any steam behind those desires to make a change.
Well, I think Minnesota's done pretty well compared to some states. And it appears that, for instance, from my understanding, you were able to provide school lunches for everybody in public school. Well, that's a damn sight better than a whole lot of other places. And I think that relieves a lot of working families from not only paying for school lunches, but making them every morning if you don't have the one at the cafeteria. So I think those kind of steps really can make life better for working families.
Oh, agreed. And there are little steps like that that seem to be made. You know, I brought up before the elections this year, as we look at the suicide rate of our veterans and the way that our veterans are treated in a lot of ways, you know, we bring them in, we break them down from who they were into what we need these military personnel to become. And then when they're discharged and they leave, there's no real deprogramming. There's no reintegration that seems to be working there. We have homeless veterans. We have people that have spent their life doing things for the military only to come back and find a lot of their private life in shambles. And, you know, homeless, when we've got in many of the states abandoned military facilities, that it seems like, why aren't we spending some time and effort into rehabbing and refurbishing these to give our veterans a place to live and restart their life?
Dave, those are great ideas. Unfortunately, mostly you're talking about soldiers in the federal armies or air forces and navies. And that is not something our state legislatures have jurisdiction over. However, we do have an ability, and I'm not sure if Minnesota has done this, but to provide really accessible mental health counseling through the new 988 telephone system that's been built, and a lot of states have joined. And those kinds of real-time, real-life services can be available through state action.
Right. And that is an important element, and I hope people heard that. The problem that I see in having relatives that served and friends that have served is the fact that when they were in the military, they were taught to be strong. They were taught to fight back their fears, their inadequacies, whatever made them feel weak. Making that call is very hard for a lot of people because they're afraid that they're going to be judged. They're afraid that they're going to look as though they're incompetent. And that's a frightful place for people to be. That's a place that, you know, we want our veterans, we want all of our society to feel like it's okay to make a call, to ask for help before you hurt yourself or someone else. But we've got to start finding a way to get that in gear and during the deprogramming or reacclimation to society, have that, re-doctrinated into our service military personnel. We have to take a quick break. Senator Karen Kaiser is with us. We'll continue with this discussion right here on News Talk 830 WCCO. It's 1:49, your time check for the Lindus Construction time check. Time to call for a free attic inspection and heat map analysis. Welcome back to the program. Chad is off. I'm Dave Schrader. In with me right now on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline, Senator Karen Kaiser. We're discussing her book, which is out and available. Getting Elected is the Easy Part, Working and Winning in the State Legislature. Like I said, I'm glad to see somebody has put the time and effort into doing this, showing the way to make these changes happen. And give us some more perspective, if you would, in the last 5-6 minutes we have here together, Senator, of things that politicians should be taking into account when they're stepping into these new positions, and what can they do to be more effective in championing the points that are so important to us Americans.
Well, I think a little advanced planning would be in order, and making sure that you have allies lined up to support what you want to do. Individuals have a very hard time if they don't have an army of advocates behind them getting stuff done. And let me say, we do have an opportunity to be much more active in our state legislatures in the next few years because if I understand what the new federal administration from the Trump presidency is going to bring, there will be lots of, federal stepping back on a lot of the rules and regulations and so forth. For instance, on the issue of overtime, we expect to see a reduction in the federal standards for overtime pay. But states can stand up and insist on having overtime paid after 40 hours a week. And that's a pure pocketbook issue that states can address if the federal government pulls back overtime standards, which we expect it was part of the Project 2025 roadmap. Another issue that I think Minnesota just did is paid family and medical leave programs that ensure job security for people who have a baby or have a medical condition that needs help attending to. And we passed a similar law 5 years ago in Washington State, and it is the most popular state program we've ever seen. Over 1 million people have used it.
Right, and ours will begin launching in 2026. It provides paid time off when a serious health condition prevents you from working, when you need time to care for your family member or for a new child, for certain military-related events, or for certain personal safety issues as well. And there are two main types of leave. That'll be the family leave and the medical leave. So that information is up. Just look up, folks, paid leave Minnesota, and you'll see the information about that on the internet on the paidleave.mn.gov. All right. Sorry, I just wanted to make sure people could find that.
I'm so glad you have that information. I think Minnesota is the sixth state in the country to pass that and get it going. So we're making progress on a lot of these things, and we have to do it one state at a time at this point, it appears. But hopefully we can coordinate some of our states and do a little better.
Senator, one thing I am concerned about, and I think I speak for a lot of people, and the fact is that, you know, with more and more benefits, it's the money's coming from somewhere. And when we're upping the minimum wage, we're changing the paid medical and paid leave, we're doing this, it has to come from somewhere, which affects the businesses. And in some instances, the smaller businesses cannot maintain, and it's crushing the American dream. The larger corporations are moving and taking their work to other countries or moving them out of our states because they can't afford it and they don't get the tax breaks here that they might get elsewhere. How do we start to maintain that and keep things at an affordable level so that business can make money, we can make money, and we're not breaking, you know, our own backs in doing these changes?
Well, I found our economies are much stronger when people who are working every day have enough money to spend it at our businesses, whether it's retail or restaurants or any other of the businesses. If they don't have any money to spend at the restaurants and the department stores or in other venues, the economy slows down, and then we have less activity and less growth. We've got a very strong, healthy state economy, and I think Minnesota does as well. And we haven't seen any kind of major exodus of businesses as we've raised standards, and people have had higher incomes, and they are more prosperous. I think that's a win-win for everyone.
The concept, yes. The problem is, though, is that we're making $15 an hour now, and the cost of living is going up exponentially, where a meal at a restaurant for a family might have been $20 for a family of four. It's now looking to be $40 to $50. Gas prices are up. Cost of housing is up. Utilities are up. So that higher standard of living we're making is actually devalued because of the cost of all the rising prices.
Prices have risen in large part because of the interruption of that awful pandemic and the supply chain problems and all of those other issues. It's moderating. It's moderating significantly. And wages are still going up and at a moderate rate as well. And the fact is, nobody's getting rich working 40 hours a week in a working class job, but they should be able to pay their rent or their mortgage and have a decent life. That's the American dream.
It certainly is. But listening to a lot of the youth, right, that are stepping up and saying, listen, I'm making 4 to 5 times what my parents did now. And, you know, they were able to maintain a house, one person working, pay for their car, sometimes a second car, their utilities. Now we're at a point where I'm making 4 or 5 times what my parents did, and I'm not able to move out of my parents' house. That is a real concern.
It is, absolutely. There is a bifurcation happening. In Washington State and other states, there's a huge growth in the billionaire class, if you would, the people who have millions and millions of dollars, many of them from high tech. But there are other categories as well. The financial world, for instance, has huge numbers of very wealthy people. And then the working class have had basically a boot on their neck for about 25 years. That boot has to be removed so that they can do better as well. Personally, I think everybody does better when they have a collective voice with their employer and have a way to bargain for better wages, benefits, and working conditions, and everyone comes out better. We just had a very long and difficult strike against the Boeing company by the machinist union here in Washington State, and everybody's going to come out better with that too.
We're out of time, Senator. Thank you so much for joining us, but I do want to make a quick mention for our listener that sent in the message. The real forgotten people in all of this talk has been the senior citizens on a fixed income, whether it's small retirement or Social Security. Home insurance goes up. All the energy costs are going up. There's just no way to stay on top of it. We are aware we need to make these changes. Senator, thank you so much for being a part of the show with me today.
Thank you, Dave. I hope everything goes well.
Check out the book, Getting Elected is the Easy Part, Working and Winning in the State Legislature. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss. I'm Dave Schrader.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're in for Chad right here on News Talk 830 WCCO.